Welcome to the Judaism From Within podcast. My name is Simi Lerner. The point and purpose of these discussions is to give an insight or a perspective from the teachings of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, someone whose ideas and worldview I both love to teach and find personally inspiring. I hope you enjoy. This week we have the beginnings of all beginnings. We have Genesis. We have the creation story. Jewish people around the world begin the reading of the Torah once again. And in this week's discussion, I want to take us on a journey through parts of the creation narrative, two areas specifically, and show how, with Rav Hirsch's lens, we can see the symbolic ideas leap forward and give us both a profound theological concept, but also, more importantly, giving us a way to view the world, how the creation narrative of the Jewish people invites us to look at the world in a certain way. I do find that this area is often overlooked, and it seems strange because this is what is painting our worldview for the rest of the Jewish story, all the way till today. How a Jew looks at the world, the fundamental core of his philosophy, is being described in the opening pages of Genesis. And what we find is, people often get distracted by approaching the Genesis narrative as some sort of subpar scientific textbook, often with the assumption that the only way to read a text is with the scientific paradigm. And throughout the intellectual history of the Jewish people, there, of course, have been authors who have dealt with questions of how the Bible mirrors the scientific understanding of the day. And by no means do I intend to belittle this area of scholarship, because I would have to stress that one would have to be both an expert in the traditions of Judaism, but also be very comfortable and grounded in the scientific worldview of his time. And of course, there is a need for such work, because it only takes a cursory glance of the story in Genesis to realize this doesn't mirror our understanding of the world today, be it from the point of view of the age of the universe, or from the point of view of the understanding of biology from an evolutionary standpoint. And many, many answers are given by many different authors. But the two points I want to mention before we get into our discussion is that on the one hand, the weight of such questions from a Jewish traditional point of view have never been that heavy. My reason for saying this is really very simple. For the Jewish people, the story of Genesis has never been a description of the process of creation from a scientific standpoint. What I mean by that is that the whole idea has always been in the cloud of mystery. From the Jewish oral tradition, it's always been described as the secret area of Jewish learning, often referred to as Maaseh Bereishis, as an area of study that is secret, hidden, a mystery. Thereby, if you work with the premises that a Jewish person is going into the reading of the Genesis narrative, there's never been a claim that they would get all the answers there. So to make the comparison from that point of view is slightly redundant. And this idea is brought to light by Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch when he says that when a person looks back at the Genesis story, he is missing premises. Not that Rav Hirsch had those premises, but he says from our point of view, all the ideas are not given in the text. What I'm doing here is not defending the truth of the Genesis story. What I'm doing is describing the methodology of both disciplines. The discipline of the Torah is that this idea is shrouded in mystery. The story of creation is by definition not given there to you in the text. And the methodology of science, one based off hypothesis, observation, rigorous criticism, in an attempt to slowly work our way forward or become closer to the truth of reality. So to have a direct contradiction, once you've taken the methodologies into account, isn't exactly possible. And a new book that recently came out by Rabbi Shmuley Phillips, Judaism Reclaimed, for besides his book being valuable in its own right, as an addition to Jewish literature, also his use or his drawing upon Rav Hirsch regularly, I find wonderful to see. For a thorough going through of this topic in a broad and accessible way, I would very much recommend his chapter on Nitzavim, where he tackles this issue from multiple perspectives and gives multiple approaches from different thinkers. So on to the meat of our discussion. The two ideas that I'm going to focus on is, on the one hand, the idea of creation itself, and the second, the description of God viewing creation. Now, people can often look at these ideas as being interesting theological or intellectual concepts. On the one hand, the Jewish people believe in creation, And on the other hand, the idea that God looked at creation. It's a description of the story. He made it, he looked at it. Now, of course, that's one simplistic way of looking at it. But for Rav Hirsch, its moral implications are truly profound. And I will stress, they may come across as cliché, but they weren't cliché when they came about. We also have to remember that when we're looking at a text with the symbolic lens of Rav Hirsch, this lens was a possible lens that throughout history people could have had. There's nothing time-bound about symbolism. This idea will come to light. Creation. From nothing. That is our first point. Well, what were the going options on the table at the time? Be it in the region where the Jewish people were, in Mesopotamia, beginning with a dragon, Epsu, and Tiamat. Heroes and gods battling and destroying the dragon, and from the dragon's skull, the heavens and the earth came. Or from Chinese mythology, of the coalescing of cosmic energies into the egg where all began from. Or under the category of something that was eternally there. And from that, creation was formed. Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch tells us that the first idea that we are told with Bereishis Bara Elohim, in the beginning God created, we get two concepts. On the one hand, the freedom in which God approaches the world. The freedom that there was nothing, and then there was something by the will of a creator. This gives validity to the experience that we have of freedom in our own lives. For when the Genesis story tells us that God created man from a combination of himself and the earth, forget about mud for a moment. Think about the concept that that's being given over here, is that the freedom in which God used to create the world from nothing, part of that is imparted to us. That is the basis of all moral reasoning, the ability that you can do one thing rather than something else, that yesterday doesn't force today. Now, this idea scientifically is hard to ground, but the Jewish claim from the very beginning is that it is central to being. It is central to what it means to be a human being, that we have this freedom of the will. And that would not be possible if God was forming the universe from something that had always been there. Rav Hirsch said, if it had always been there, well then God would be limited by it. Think about that for a moment. And that brings us on to our second idea that this simple statement of creation gives us. If it had always been there, and from that God created the universe, well then he would be limited by that which was always there that he was forced to use. And where does that leave us? If God was forced to use some sort of pre-existing eternal matter, well then, is there really a possibility of moral change on my part? Is it possible for me to truly recreate who I am? The claim of the Jewish tradition that I have the ability to turn the direction of my own life, to literally create from nothing in the moral sphere, to say that yesterday will not force today. Is that truly possible if the Creator himself was forced? And that idea is negated with the creation from nothing at the very beginning. But Rav Hirsch takes this idea further. If God was forced to use pre-existing matter to create the universe, then he would be limited by the junk he was forced to use. If he was forced to use a certain matter, and from that the world would be created, well then any evil in the world could not be justified as part of some greater plan. It could easily be put down to the pre-existing, eternal junk God was forced to use. In which case there is no higher moral goal. There is no higher moral calling that everything else is working itself towards. Evil that we experience in the world, injustice that we experience in the world that is very real. The Jewish claim has always been, there is a greater picture to it. True, that is not emotionally satisfying, but it is an answer that from Eoi, from Job, we have always received. But if God was forced, that means the existence of this evil is not down to some higher purpose. It is just down to necessity. Those two ideas are stood against with the opening paragraphs of Genesis. God in freedom creates, giving validity to our freedom because he acts in freedom. And second of all, the evil that we experience in the world. The best of all possible worlds was created, and evil that we experience in our lives are put down to a goal, a moral goal that is potentially higher than our understanding. These two moral principles that Judaism has been screaming for eternity, the freedom of the will and their purpose to creation, are both given over by this opening lines of Genesis. So that is our first point. But now let us go on to our second. And in a way, this one becomes very relevant in this day and age, with the rise of Eastern philosophies. The language at the beginning, in the opening psukim, in the opening verses of Genesis, describe God viewing the world. And it is very specific in its language. It does not say God saw that the light was good. That is not what it says. It says that God saw the light, that it was good. Now, an interesting point in grammar, but why is this so structural to our religious worldview? Because this negates the idea, or negates the popular view, that the universe is simply an emanation of God, that God is part of the universe. The universe is God, some form of pantheism or substance of Spinoza. The opening lines of Genesis negate this misconception. The universe forever remains dependent on him, but he is not dependent on the universe. The universe does not make up what we call God. It firmly places the objectivity of the world vis-a-vis its creator, not as the life force relates to an organism, but as a worker relates to his work. And if we follow through the moral implications from this worldview, we see the connection. If the universe is simply an emanation of God, it teaches us that God had to create the universe. What I mean by that is, if it is a pure emanation from God, or the universe is part of God, then there was no choice to create. It was God. It came by necessity of his own being. This we lose God's freedom. But also, moral distinctions fall away. If everything is God, or everything is part of God, and it's not very difficult to go the next stage, then if everything is God, evil in the world, good in the world, isn't an act of God, or what God allowed to take place. No, that is God. And your moral distinctions disappear in a vacuum of universality. God is just and unjust. God is good and is evil. Not the Jewish claim has always been. We never talk about God. We talk about how he acts. This fundamental principle in Jewish philosophy loses all its meaning if we identify the world as God. And Rav Hirsch says this false conception is negated by God viewing his work. The description of the Bible in the anthropomorphic sense of God viewing something gives us the core principle that we don't identify the artisan with his work. So to summarize our two points, we spoke about the principle of creation and we spoke about the principle of pantheism. The principle of creation is being asserted, and with its moral implication that follows, that God acts in freedom, hence we act in freedom. God created from nothing, hence the world that we see and experience was made with purpose, and evil or unjust activity that we experience can be put down to some greater moral cause. Both these ideas negated with a universe that had always been there for eternity. And our second idea, the viewing of creation by God, to once again stand against the misconception that God is part of the universe. Not that the universe is simply dependent on God, but no, God is the universe, and how that universality leads to all moral distinctions losing their meaning. Now we can see how this idea directly relates to the Jewish mission of perfection, of becoming more godlike, of walking in God's way, that any idea in Judaism that proclaims this concept of creation isn't just a claim of an interesting intellectual or scientific point, but it is a deeply moral claim. Hence the centrality of Shabbos for the Jewish people, because that is a testimony, a sign to this idea of creation, and how that idea is so rooted in the Jewish people, and how we view the world, and how we act towards other people. Thank you very much for listening, and have a wonderful Shabbos.